everyone, and welcome to minute 66 of season 10 of Movie Robin, the daily podcast where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again for this season is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back for yet another season of having to endure talking to me about another movie, Heather.
I love talking to you about the movies. I just really, really get anxious when I have to answer your questions that I do disastrously bad at. But now I feel like it's a good punchline, so I'm excited to be here.
All right, well, we'll see on Thursday when you have five trivia questions and every other day when you're going to have to start naming remakes, but we'll see.
Yes!
We'll see. We'll see. I have faith in you. I think you're going to be able to do it, Heather. I know you know your 70s trivia, so you're going to be good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that we'll know by the end of the week, but I have faith in you.
It's a good thing somebody does.
That's true. That's true. Okay, so why don't we start with things off simply. Why don't you tell me and everybody what your history is with this movie?
I saw it when I was really young. As you've listened to me on this podcast before, you know that my parents did not censor much of what we watched as kids. And my mom loved 70s crime movies. So I was watching Serpico, The French Connection. I watched, you know, Taxi Driver. Like, none of those things were off limits to me as a wee child. And I saw this when I was pretty young. And I think over the years, I kind of mixed it up with some of the other movies in this genre. But I love this genre. It's one of my favorites. I love the grittiness of it. I love how, like, dark and kind of sardonic it all is, too. It's just, they're a lot of fun. I love crime thrillers. They're they have some of the most fun tension building, I think, in movies. But I remember liking this. I didn't remember most of the actors or anything because I was so young. And I don't think I watched it again for probably till my teens, maybe early 20s. So it's been a good solid 25 years since I watched it.
Oh, wow.
At least, yes. So I sat down and I fully admit sometimes, depending on how much time I have available, I don't always watch the full movie. If I've seen it many times before I come on the show, and I'll just do the clips and prepare for those before I come on. But this time I was like, no, I want to watch it. Also, my husband has never seen it and he hasn't experienced a lot. Like Rob and I were talking about before the show, he hasn't experienced a lot of 70s crime dramas at all, thrillers, none of that. So I'm like, you're going to like this one, and you do not want to start with either of the remakes. don't.
Definitely please. Not. Have you seen both remakes?
I've seen the Travolta one. And
what do you think of it?
I have nothing nice to say, so okay, I'll leave
good.
It at that.
Neither do I, and that's fine.
Yep.
That's why.
Yeah. It's pretty terrible. So I told him, you know, you can't watch any of those, and he's like, fine. So we sat down. He freaking loved it, too. And I enjoyed the absolute crap out of it. It was so, so enjoyable. It was like, it was just kind of like time traveling back to this timeline. Like, I even got like the vibes of when I was a little kid watching these movies with my mom. Like,
oh, wow.
Simpler times.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It was really great. So I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed the rewatch. And I'm glad that the nostalgia pumped in too.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. And did you remember everything that happens here, or was most of it like a surprise to you?
I remembered a few of the parts, and I remember some of the dynamics. I remembered that Robert Shaw was in it. I had completely forgotten that Jerry Stiller was in it.
Ooh.
And he's great. He's really wonderful. Everybody's great in it, actually. But
even great men need to pee.
Yes.
We'll get that line this week, but yeah.
Yeah, there are, and that's the other thing. The dialogue is spectacular. The dialogue is spectacular because the delivery is also spectacular. It's really, really great. Yeah, this is peak 70s crime thriller.
Yes,
me.
I agree. I think it's great. Okay, and I'm so glad that you actually sat and watched the whole thing once again all the way through in order to keep your mind fresh of everything that goes on here, because you know it's. It's so much fun picking a movie that a lot of people, you know about and are aware of and saw at some point, but, you know, might need to refresh their memory on and stuff like that. So, you know, that's one of the refreshing things about doing a movie like this.
Yeah, I think when you announced that this was your next one, I was like, awesome. This gives me motivation to
That's right.
rewatch.
Gives you a reason to rewatch them again.
Not yeah.
Why not? All right. So minute 66 begins with Blue rationalizing things and ends with Blue making a request. So, you know, anyone who's hopefully everyone who's listening has been following along. So last week we ended things with someone taking a shot at the train and Brown getting a little upset, just shooting every which way you can, and Blue rationally or in a calm way tries to get the information as to what's going on. And you know, this minute opens up with him just saying, well, I suppose someone out there just got nervous or bored. He's been there a long time. And then he looks up and, you know, we get a shot of the hostages that are on the floor. They're all here looking a little scared at this point because they're starting to realize how serious this whole situation is. You know, up until now, they've had a few moments where they can see that these men mean business. But at this point, they don't really know what's going to happen because, you know, someone just shot at them and actually hit one of them. So who knows what's going to happen. And then Mr. Blue gets up and goes, can't afford to let it pass. And I got to say, that's a great line. The way that he just delivers that, meaning that, you know, I don't want to do this, but I need to show that I mean business. And the way you show that you mean business is, you just have to respond. And
yeah.
I like it. I mean, and you know, one of the great things about this particular scene where we see Blue talking is you can see Brown in the background where it looks like his eyes are like looking up and, you know, up and to the right at Blue the whole time. So in some ways it could even be perceived that Brown is dead, the way that his eyes are just glazed and looking at him. And again, I've always loved, you know, Mr. Brown. And you know who plays Mr. Brown, right?
Brown is... Gray is Hector Elizondo, right?
I'm not talking about Gray yet. I'm talking about Brown.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So I'm just making sure I'm not confusing the two. I don't remember who Brown is.
Earl Hyman.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I recognize him.
Who is most famous for being Wilson on Home Improvement.
Yes. Yes. We still say, I don't think so, Tim, in our house.
That's right. Well, you like me grew up in you know, not far away from where that show takes place.
Yeah. 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 It was a good time.
I lived even closer to where it took place because it took place in Royal Oak.
Oh yeah. And you were in Southfield.
That's right. It's right next to Southfield. There you go. And sure. So I remember I used to say, oh, wow, I wish I could like figure out where they were actually living. I mean, I know that they didn't film it in Detroit, but still, it's still fun.
It was one of the rare shows that took place in Detroit metro area, but yes, also constantly referenced it. It wasn't just that this is where it is.
Well, it's because Tim Allen is originally from that area. And that's why he did that. I don't know if his other shows was Last Man Standing. Also, did it also take place in Detroit? I don't think so.
I don't know. I never watched that one. I know that he lives in Charlevoix now because he lived not too far away from my husband's grandmother, like down the street from her.
Okay.
And he does all the like Pure Michigan videos and stuff now too, which he has a great voice for too. So it's great. But yeah, I haven't seen any of his subsequent shows since then. So
I haven't either. I haven't either because Home Improvement was great. And never, the other stuff I just didn't hear was as good. Let's put it that way. You know, but maybe it is.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm sure there are people out there who have seen it and know better than we do. So you know, I'm not going to talk about things I don't know about at all. Why would I do that?
You know, but no. Brown is Wilson.
I'm going to bring up my favorite anecdote though about Home Improvement that I've probably mentioned before. So in the first season, there's an episode where Tim is forced to go out to dinner with his wife and I think someone from her work or something like that. And he doesn't want to go because there's a football game on that night that he wants to see. Okay. And it was the Lions, the Detroit Lions playing the LA Rams. Now I was at that game. Okay.
Seriously?
And obviously they record the shows weeks, if not months, beforehand or anything like that. That was the game where Mike Utley was paralyzed.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So, and you know, and then they when they took him off the field on stretcher, he put up like a big thumbs up sign and stuff like that. And to me, the most amazing thing was here I was watching an episode that supposedly takes place. And, you know, normally it's just, okay, it's a football game. You know, it doesn't matter who's going to win in the end or anything like that. But by the way that they're just discussing, the game. Because, like, Tim brings a transistor radio with him in order to listen to the game while he's at
this
game.
Yep, I remember.
You know, that's
I remember.
So again, he's cheering and whatever it is. And again, I know what happened at that game. But obviously, they don't reference it at all in the show for obvious reasons, because it was made, you know, they recorded it weeks beforehand. But it to me, it's just funny when little things like that happen where they couldn't know that type of thing. You know?
No.
But,
they probably just thought it was a regular random game. Also, it's just cool that you were at the game, let alone having that happen.
That's right. But most people who are sitting and watching a TV show or a movie or something like that, where there is a game happening or whatever it is, it's generally inconsequential what's going to happen in the game if someone's just cheering or whatever it is. You know, because I don't
and
remember.
And usually you think that they're made up, too. Like, you wouldn't be thinking that they'd be actually following the Lions.
Right.
Season, like, yeah, you would just think they'd make some BS up for the most part.
That's right.
That makes it,
right.
I appreciate the authenticity. That's crazy.
Yes. Yes. So
all right. So Wilson is brown.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I did not know that. I recognized him at the end. At the end, I recognized him.
I was going to say you have to wait until he takes off the mustache, but then again, Wilson, you just have to look at his eyes. You know, like you just did, but no one else can see that because audio.
I put my hand under my nose for the listeners and hiding the under half of my face, since Wilson's face was always up at the fence.
Exactly.
Actually, in junior high, I remember coming to lunch and the gym teacher always greeted everybody at the door and he had a microphone and he would talk and he would always say, "It's Heidi Ho time." And he would do Wilson's voice and that's how he would talk during lunch to us. And we all thought it was hilarious. I totally forgot about that until right now.
It makes sense.
Ah, nostalgia.
Right. And then the shot changes and we get to see Patrolman James and we hear on a radio who started it, who fired first, them or us. Now, one of the things I love when the way that they show this is that we don't hear James actually update Rico. We don't need to. And throughout this week, we're going to find a few times here where people are being updated, but or people have been updated, but we don't hear them being updated. You know, that type of thing. And I think it's very, very cool the way that they do it because, you know, basically they must have decided, all right, we don't need the viewer doesn't need to hear James say, oh, they just took a shot. You know,
yeah,
he gave the information over and we hear Rico's response. You know, it makes me wonder, and obviously I will never know the answer to this. Was that something that they filmed and then just edited it out because they didn't need it? Or if, you know, when they wrote the script, they said, okay, we don't need that. And that would be it. Yeah.
Either way, it makes sense not to do it because at this point, there's a lot more tension building.
Yes.
We've had the first, and it's explosive violence. It happens very quickly. It's definitely shocking. I think that's when they pan over, like you said, when they pan over all of the hostages and they're freaking out. Everybody, at this point, everybody knows that things just got real.
That's right.
So I think this is really where the movie kind of shifts for me.
Yeah.
Literally right at the beginning of this, where we start today, it's where the movie totally shifts for me and the tension is different. There's a less sense of not, I can't say danger, but less belief that it's necessarily going to happen. You still have the hope that maybe everybody's going to get out of this. Okay. There's potential for this. And I
and
think
now,
that's what
right. Okay.
Everybody involved wants. Yeah. So.
That's right. Because basically up until now, the only person who's been killed is Kaz Dalowitz. And he was killed by Mr. Gray And Blue was not happy about the fact that he did it, meaning that Blue was trying to get away with doing this without having to kill anybody, without any violence.
Which, that's just pragmatic. And Blue is extremely pragmatic. I think that's why he stays so calm throughout everything. Also, at this point...
We're going to find out this week that he doesn't stay so calm as he should be, as we would.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't. But for the moment, he's still playing it really calm, like he's in control. And Gray also was giving him kind of crap earlier, saying, you know, yeah, I didn't have people shoot people for me. I did it myself. And he's acting like Blue doesn't have the gusto to do it.
That's right.
And so everybody is kind of flipped upside down at this point. Every single person involved. Mm-hmm. It's so to keep that tension going, you're not going to want to have as many redundancies, I think, as far as pacing goes.
Okay.
So it makes sense not to. Yeah. So like you said, whether they filmed it and cut it out, I don't know, or whether it was never on the page. It makes sense.
Oh, it's a great choice. I have no qualms about that. And then Patrolman James responds and goes, I don't know, Lieutenant. It came from somewhere behind me in the dark. It had to be one of them, one of the snipers they got down here. And then he responds, snipers. You mean somebody just took it in his head to fire on his own? How could he do such a thing? Which is a hilarious thing for Rico to actually say, because it makes so much sense that somebody would do that. You know, here, I have a chance. I'm going to take a shot, and nobody's going to ever know it's me. So why not? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it does make total sense. I also appreciate that they don't ever fully explain it. They just move on. They're like, yep, this is what we think happened. And
That's right. And then
we're not James going to come easy, back to it.
Easy, Lieutenant. Real easy. And then Rico says to him, well, can you see what's going on inside the train? And he goes, no, but it's not too good. I'd sure hate to be in there finding out. Meaning that James knows that this is, you know, as you said, the tide has turned. Something is going to happen, and he knows that it's not good for anybody who's on the train or attend. And right at that moment when he says not too good, we hear like some sort of sound in the background. We don't really know what it is, but you know, we're and then the shot changes and we see Blue deciding starts walking around the car, and he looks around. And, you know, we see him debating and we see him look at various members of the hostages, you know, and we see that everyone is quite scared. They don't really know what's going on. And then the camera shows us the Bud, the conductor, and he goes, conductor. And what's great is we first see that the conductor is like hiding his face. As if, like, you know, if I hide my face, no one will see that I'm here. You know, I'm invisible. If
he's ostriching.
Yes, exactly. And right after he says, you know, conductor, we hear like a great musical cue. That's sort of like how do I even describe the type of musical cue? It's just great because it's telling us that something foreboding is about to happen here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cue. You know right away that things are changing, are escalating, are going bad, worse.
Yes. And then Bud goes, "You mean me?" He goes, "Yes, I do mean you. Would you stand up and come down here, please?" And
Bud,
that's how this minute ends.
Why do you think he chose him?
I think he chose him because he represents the Transit Authority.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I think that's what it comes down to. I don't.
Oh, maybe because of, if we're not jumping ahead and talking about what eventually happens, maybe when the runaway train happens, they don't want him there for that either.
I must honestly say that I don't think he is thinking that far ahead.
Okay.
I think he's saying, I want to make the biggest impact on everyone to realize that I mean business, and the one person to do this to is someone who works for the train, you know, works for the train.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's not going to want to do it with women or children.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a person of authority. It does make sense. Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's what I think. You know.
That's a pretty good explanation.
Right. So he mentions they mentioned earlier the word sniper. Do you know when the term sniper originated?
World War II.
No, it goes all the way back to 18th century British India.
Oh, wow.
And it comes from the idea of that there were soldiers, British soldiers, that were hunting the difficult to shoot snipe bird.
Snipe bird.
The person who was able to do it, you know, was a stealthy marksman who was able to do it. This is like around 1820s, stuff like that. So they would call him he was a sniper because he was able to shoot the snipe bird. And then during World War I, it became more common because of the idea of trench warfare and the invention of telescopic sights and things like that. Obviously, during World War II, it became even more expanded. You know, that's where we get Jackson from Saving Private Ryan being able to do what he's doing. And at that point in World War II, they started adding like camouflage and specific weapons to use in order to shoot with and things like that. Specialized training and things like that, which obviously nowadays modern snipers are even more prolific in their training and
everything. Oh yeah. I just read a book on Fallujah and the snipers there and that urban warfare and how much of an impact they made. Particularly, I can't think of his name right now, but the guy who they made the movie American Sniper about. But really,
Chris,
really, really Chris, crazy.
Was it Chris?
Chris, yes.
Chris. I can't remember his
name. Chris Kyle. Chris Kyle.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's pretty impressive what they can and what they do now and how much it influences warfare.
For sure. Yeah, that's something that's seen all the time. Okay, so did you have anything else you wanted to discuss about this particular man?
Oh, I just thought it was really, really cool how literally every character and everything shifted here, that you could actually feel it. And like you noted with the music, how immediately you're like, okay, yep, had hit it the fan.
Yes, it
essentially
has. It has.
Yeah.
All right, very cool.
This is a good one.
Okay, so every Monday we have a segment called Mathau Monday, where my guests will give their top five Walter Mathau performances. So Heather, why don't you start with your number four? Five and work your way up.
All right. My mom loved Walter Matthau, so I got to see a lot of Walter Matthau movies when I was a kid. And I'm basing this mostly on the movies that I watched when I was younger. So number five is Fortune Cookie, a movie with Jack Lemmon, and he was wonderful with Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon plays his brother-in-law. I think he won an Oscar, was nominated for an Oscar for this too.
He won an Oscar for that one.
Yep. Fantastic. Number four, Taking a Pelham 1-2-3. He's so good in this. He's really, really great. He still has that like underlying ability to play humor, but it's really, really low key and dark. But he plays it pretty straight and understated, and I thought he was really great. Number three, Grumpy Old Men. I love Grumpy Old Men. It's a good time. I haven't watched it in forever, but now I kind of want to go back and see it. Number two, The Odd Couple. Him and Jack Lemmon, they're so good together. Like, you know, Robert Redford and Paul Newman were wonderful, but so were Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. And my number one is my personal favorite as a kid because I watched it over and over again, and it's Bad News Bears. I love Bad News Bears. I watched that whenever my mom would let me when I was a kid.
Did you think that you were Amanda when you were growing up? Is that what the idea is here?
I did not. I just like grumpy old men, and I like the idea of, and girls playing sports was always, you know, good for me because I was always the girl playing with sports with the boys. So yeah, maybe I did see myself in that a little bit.
Okay, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It wasn't a knock on that, you know.
No, I just hadn't really thought about it. That's all. Yeah, I haven't watched it since I was probably a teenager or a tween either. I feel very motivated to go back and watch a lot of movies right now.
That's good. I'm glad that I'm able to bring that out in you. Making you wanna go rewatch movies.
Yeah, it's a nice, and it was a nice nostalgia trip.
Excellent. All right. So every day we also have a daily game, which we are going to play, which is called Name That Remake, where I'm going to give you the years of when an original movie came out and when the remake came out, and I'm going to give you a brief synopsis, and you're going to have to try and guess what movie we're talking about. So this is all random. I have absolutely no idea what movie you're going to get. So we're going to spin the wheel and see what movie comes out. Maybe it'll be something that Heather knows, and maybe it won't be. Who
Hope
knows?
it is. Let me feel like a winner today. I need a win.
Okay. So the original movie came out in 1951, and the remake came out in 1994. Okay, and it is about a young boy who wishes for help from above, in order to help his favorite sports team, succeed.
Angels in the Outfield?
Yep.
Oh, I have a funny story about that movie, but it's not appropriate for the show.
No, you can tell the story. Or you don't want to tell the story, is that what you're saying?
I can tell it. I can
So
tell
tell
it.
it. Yeah.
It was one of the first times I'd ever smoked marijuana, and I watched Angels in the Outfield for the first time.
Oh,
It was not a good experience. It was not good at all. I stayed away from marijuana.
wasn't an
Nope.
angelic
And
experience for
I lost the ability to talk, me. I was like frozen in the chair watching this movie, and it was utter torture.
Wait a second. So we now know you're a kryptonite. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, at least when I was like 17, 18. Oh God, no, I was older than that. I think I was like 18. Yeah, 18 or 19, maybe even. I think I had moved out of my house, parents' house. Somewhere in that timeline, it's been a while. I just remember not being able to get out of that seat. I was like, this movie is messed up. Nope, I was messed up. The movie's fine.
The movie's okay. It's a fun movie. It's not
Yeah.
perfect, but it's still
No.
fun. One of
Yeah.
the things I like about the movie is the idea that Matthew McConaughey's in it.
Yeah. He randomly like shows up in so many funny things. Oh, he's great.
Yes. All right, excellent. So, Heather, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Heather Baxendale?
You can find me at heatherbaxendale.com. You can find my books there, and you can find both of my podcasts. You can find all my social media stuff there, all of my goodies in one place. I'm so organized now.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, achoo!
Good night.